Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to cover the idea of what happens when you cook your food, the actual chemical changes that occur in both plant-based and also in meat. Very important information. Then we're going to look at how cancer has overtaken heart disease as the main cause of death in 12 European countries. This is from Oxford University. And what should they know? Now, the good news is we have people all over those 12 European countries who listen every day. So you'll have a lot of good information. So you, even if you have been doing something that causes cancer, you can stop it and start to repair the damage. There is a Ayurvedic ingredient. It is called Shilajit, S-H-I-L-A-J-I-T. What to do? Something really important, based upon a new study. Hopefully, you'll be using it in the future. Also, a pediatric conference, according to Yale and Harvard Universities, declare cell phones and wireless cause brain cancer and other health issues. All right, how bad is it? I'll tell you. More than 65% of the U.S. has unsafe levels of toxic chemicals in drinking water. I'll go into that in depth and explain why we're not being told the truth, what can we do to protect ourselves, and a lot more on health. From our environmental segment today, worsening climate emergency and record CO2 emissions demand a vegetarian diet in order to save the planet. And this is from Countercurrents, Dr. Gideon Poliwa. Also, from the person who's one of the most respected journalists in Great Britain, George Monbiot, he says, why I took the plunge at last and converted almost to vegetarianism or veganism. So I have two different insights on that. And scientists discover what's killing the bees, and it's worse than you think. So we'll look at that. Then I'm going to put three things together, share them with you, and then have a talk back segment where you have an opportunity to call in and share your points of view. I'm going to look at what we're not being told about these treaties, especially the TTIP. And we're going to hear from Julian Assange and several other people who have gotten some glimpse of some parts of the treaty and why Obama and Hillary Clinton are working so hard to pass these. What's the payoff? Who benefits? Who loses? But also we're going to look at some of the things that Clinton says, like she says, judge me not on any bias, which is fair enough, but judge me upon what I've done. Okay, we will. And that'll tie in to the TTIP. And then to wrap that up, we're going to have a segment from George Carlin talking about the American dream and how it might upset you. So we have a lot to share on today's program. And hopefully holding time aside for you to have an opportunity to call in and share your points of view. I'm going to begin with how bad it is in Europe when it comes to cancer. Now, this is from the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom. I'll quote them. Although the diseases of the heart and blood vessels, cardiovascular diseases, kill more people worldwide than anything else, with 17 million deaths globally, cancer has now overtaken cardiovascular disease as the main cause of death in 12 European countries. This was published this week in the European Heart Journal, and it shows that the European region, defined as the 53 member states of the World Health Organization, cardiovascular disease caused more than 4 million deaths each year, 45% of all deaths. However, success in preventing and treating the disease has led to a large decrease in cardiovascular disease in a number of countries. Despite cancer accounting for less than half of the number of deaths than cardiovascular disease in Europe as a whole, in 9 of the 15 countries which were members of the European Union before 2004, and in another country that was among those that joined the European Union afterwards, more men now die from cancer than heart disease. Now, here are the countries where cancer is now killing more than any other disease: Belgium, Denmark, France, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Portugal, Slovenia, Spain, and the United Kingdom. This was also the case in Norway and Israel, which are not members of the European Union. Among women, more die from cancer than cardiovascular disease in Denmark and Israel. And they don't go into what they think is the cause. They just do a very careful analysis of the people dying in those countries. All right, now, having been to many of those countries, I'll share my own insights. During the Second World War, there were severe restrictions in food. In fact, if you lived in the country and you had not been bombed, and in Denmark, or for example, in Sweden, which was neutral, but in the English countryside, there were places that were not affected, as in Ireland or Scotland, then you could live off the land, and generally speaking, people lived in communities or were part of a community. And hence you knew your neighbor. Many had been there for multiple generations. So people shared. If one person had extra sweet potatoes and someone else had dried fish, then you each had some sweet potatoes and dried fish. And because you weren't having your livestock confiscated or your vegetables confiscated, you had more to share. But also people hid a lot. They were afraid that if too many people knew that they had food, that they would have no food for their own family. And out of self-preservation, they kept to themselves, at least as far as the food went. Now, in countries that had to give up on sugar and meat and eggs because they simply didn't have enough to go around, because an awful lot was being taken from the farmers and given to the armed forces. After all, the soldiers had to eat every day. They weren't in their farms. And so, understandably so, when you have a war, you have to have provisions. One person who found that out in a harsh way was Napoleon when he invaded Russia. It was the Russian winter that destroyed him. He lost over half or more of his troops after he conquered Russia and then found out, wow, I didn't know that it got this bad. It got that bad. The Russians were smart. They went ahead and burned fields, so they had nothing to eat, and many of the people starved to death or succumbed to disease. In any case, rations during the Second World War, ironically, showed that when people ate what was considered humbler food, like beans or legumes or pulses or root vegetables, because you can store a root vegetable as long as you're about 8 feet underground, you can keep it almost all year. Potatoes, apples, a lot of stuff. Or you can keep it right in the ground. You don't have to harvest something that's in the ground. You can frequently leave it there. Take it when you need it. In any case, they were healthier. They had less heart disease. They had less cancer. They had less high blood pressure. They had certainly had a lot less obesity. And then after the war, they went back to their standard diets. But also people began to appreciate the power of making some food for themselves, so they ended up with what's called the gardens, victory gardens, not only in England and in France, but also in the United States. For the next 40 years, especially from, let's say, 1945 to about 1985, Americans began a relationship with fast foods, convenience foods, TV dinners. Why spend time in the kitchen? Why go to a farmer's market or a supermarket when you could just have something, put it in a microwave, and eat it? That was the idea. Also, then fast food started to realize we've got people hooked from an early age, and we've conditioned their taste buds. So let's just keep feeding them more of the same, something we control. So if you notice, all the fast food restaurants either serve you pizzas that are primarily gluten in the crust, a genetically modified dairy, in the cheeses, some dead meat that never goes bad, like pepperoni, and some sauce. And it was actually, I think, Ronald Reagan who tried the idea that why can't we make ketchup a vegetable? Yeah, because they had a little bit of ketchup in a day, it was from tomatoes, so that would satisfy those who said, am I getting enough nutrients if I'm eating pizza? Sure, you're getting a vegetable group, you're getting tomatoes. No, but that's how their mindset worked. So what we have had in the United States as our standard of comfort foods, and virtually all of our cooking shows, and virtually all of the television channel shows that are watched worldwide, whatever you're watching in the United States, you're watching in every country around the world. So the idea was, eat the foods that everybody's talking about. For example, there's now a program that I watched called Carnival Food. And I didn't know that you could make so many dishes from corn dogs, or how they would take ice cream and deep fry ice cream after battering it. And every single ingredient is just a stroke. I mean, it's just terrible food. And here's this guy saying, oh, this looks great, and how long you had this in your family, and how many of these do you sell, and you go from carnival to carnival, and everybody eats this and says, this feels good. Or the idea that, forget supersize, how about monolithic size meals? Far more than what your body can possibly process healthily, but it makes you feel filled up, much like the old idea of an all-you-can-eat meal. So if you're only paying $9, eat five servings of shrimp or whatever you're going to eat. And this is how it works. Well, please understand that shrimp in all probability came from China and it was fed pig manure. So no way in the world is that shrimp healthy. And you don't know what's going on in your gut, especially if it hasn't been cooked thoroughly. And even if it has, you can still get contamination from the heavy metals, medicines, anything that's in that manure is in the shrimp and it's in your body. But that's a secondary issue. The issue is that the entire world went on a gluttony binge. And we've been on it ever since. But it's in two phases. Let's take Japan. For about 40 years, Japan was shown to be the longest lived and the healthiest nation on the planet. Now, the Japanese also lived in Okinawa, and the natives of Okinawa lived longer than those on the mainland of Japan because they did more exercise, their food was cleaner, and they had a more relaxed life. It's very hectic if you live in the suburbs or cities of Japan. Not so much if you're in the country, and certainly not in Okinawa. But the longest-lived people on the planet were the Hunzikuts, those who lived up in the Hunza, the high Himalayas, frequently at 12,000 feet. That's just about as high as you can have anyone exist without major problems. But they had been there for 2,000 years. So they had these lush, long valleys filled with natural foods being grown, and they did not gluttonize, very little obesity, lots of longevity, completely normal for people to live to be 100 or longer in vital health. Nothing sprayed, no pesticides, no genetically modified anything, and they didn't overeat. In most cultures, they didn't overeat, and they were not calorie-rich foods. When you're eating lots of salads and greens and bitters, you're not eating heavy on calories. When you're eating meat, you are. Sugar, yes. And so people who had once been very healthy now came their children and the baby boomers in Japan and in the United States, and they started getting into more and more health junk foods. But about 10% of Americans, also growing up in the 1960s and 70s, realized that they were much better for their body to have organic and healthy and lots of salads. So they began to motivate their own children towards a healthier diet. And indeed today, many of their children, the Y generation or the millennial generation, are much healthier. They make much healthier choices. They exercise. They They're very conscious. But about 90% of Americans don't. They're into obesity, diabetes, heart disease, cancers, all forms of inflammatory conditions. They're prematurely aging and they're dying way before they should. And that's because they've been gluttonizing off bad foods, sedentary lifestyle, and a lot of cancer-causing microorganisms in their biochemistry and electromagnetic pulses coming in their body from cell phones and from microwaves and from their computer. That's exactly what's happening in Europe. And in fact, the more advanced some of those civilizations, as far as their education, because Denmark has the best educational system in the world, and yet it teaches children the least amount of hours per week, 20 hours maximum, and that includes lunch. So it's actually 4 hours of study per day, and yet they have the smartest kids. And why? Because they believe in outside time, green time, spend time with nature, play. Because let kids play and learn through play. Let them learn through being around other kids. Let them learn natural life lessons. Let them burn off a lot of that energy, as we did when we were growing up. I did. I know all my friends did. And today we overstress children. Everything's about the test. In Denmark, it's not. It's about learning, critical learning, understanding what you're learning, how to apply what you're learning. So they don't have junk education. They have very high-quality education, and they beat America in every single area of education. So we've got a junk food diet. We've got junk food education. We have a lot of junk food jobs we don't like that are not giving us a living wage, and all that creates a massive amount of stress. Stress leads to cancer. The more stressed you are, the more cancer you're going to have. Also, with all the fried foods and all the meat in the diet, because one of the things that historically you didn't have a lot of in Europe, you didn't have a lot of meat. You had meat, of course, but you didn't have massive amounts. Today, you do, because meat is cheap all over Europe. As a result, you're eating meat, which causes cancer because of how it's cooked. That causes heterocyclic amines. And you have a lot of carbohydrate, there's your acrylamides. Perfect combination. Also, there's more alcohol consumed. And you can show direct correlations in the amount of alcohol consumption and the amount of cancer. For example, esophageal cancer, gastrointestinal cancer, stomach cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. So when you factor in how we now have a universal social order, setting aside your individual politics, setting aside your individual hobbies, those people who have healthy lifestyles in both exercise and eating, who are conscious of what they're eating, you do not see the cancer in those people, not by any statistically significant amount. But the other citizens, you do. So where you do have a very good group of people, in each of the countries I mentioned who are very healthy, ideally healthy, you see a lot who are not, who live off pizzas, live off hamburgers, live off french fries, live off alcohol, smoking, drinking alcohol, pizzas, and not exercising. What in the world do you expect the outcome to be? It can only be cancer. So that's what the study from Oxford didn't tell you. Now you can fill in some of those gaps there. Next up, there is an Ayurvedic ingredient. It's like a tar-like mineral. It comes from the rocks in the Himalayas. Now, I was first given a jar of this by the emir's son. The emir was the ruler of Hunza, and he came to see me to see if I could use the large audience I had, the largest afternoon audience in all of American radio, when I was on WMCA. And he said, this is what we use in our country for everything. Where's it come from? It oozes out. It's like a black tar. And it gets a little hard. And you say you take a little piece of it and you put it into a tea and you warm the tea up and stir it. And then you drink it down. It tasted terrible. But it was very healthy. I gave mine to a friend of mine who was not doing well, an older person, and they used it and said it was bad tasting but really helped them. Now we jump forward, and there's new research showing that this is called S-H-I-L-A-G-I-T, Shilajit, and it is helping people with skeletal muscle. It really benefits you, and especially if you're overweight. The more overweight you are, the more this helps you. You don't need a lot, but studies show that it really improves skeletal muscle adaptation in overweight people. So just something that else to help that hasn't been out there. No one's talked about it. Now, this is from the University of North Carolina. Replacing just one sugary drink with water could significantly improve your health. Quote from the University of North Carolina. Think one little sugary soda won't make a difference on your waistline? Think again. If people replace just one calorie-laden drink with water, they can reduce body weight and improve overall health. Quote, regardless of how many servings of sugar-sweetened beverages you consume, replacing even just one serving can be a benefit. That's according to Dr. Duffy on the faculty in human nutrition, food, and exercise. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. So, give up the soft drinks, replace them with mineral water, and you're not just going to lose weight, you're going to be healthier. And then finally, there was an article about our water. And this was an interesting discussion, and it's from PreventDisease.com. Quote, more than 65% of U.S. has unsafe levels of toxic chemicals in drinking water. Levels of a widely used class of industrial chemicals linked with liver toxicity, developmental problems, tumor growth, and hormonal disruptions exceed federally recommended safety levels in public drinking water supplies for 33 states. And this was done at Harvard, School of Engineering and Applied Sciences. Quote, the chemical contaminants that infest city water supplies in industrialized nations are abundant, including fluoride, chlorine, and many others. What's worse is that many of these chemicals are added intentionally under faulty, misguided science. To top that off, city officials are increasingly being caught for falsifying documents and submitting fraudulent water tests. And now you look at all these chemicals that are ending up in our water supply, and you can't tell they're there by looking at the water because it doesn't show itself. The water can look clear and clean. It isn't. It's contaminated. So just remember that. And even swimming in a pool that has chlorine in it is not good for you. So those are just some of the latest on health environmental issues. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Now, I'm going to take you all now on an insight into the TTIP. There are three treaties. We've only been listening to the challenges to one. This is even more serious. Please listen in.
WikiLeaks is raising a €100,000 reward for Europe's most wanted secret, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership.
This is something enormous. It is about a final control, and it's the United States saying there may be another power in the world, but we will be the ultimate power.
The TTIP is the most important thing that is happening in Europe right now. It's a secretive deal being negotiated between Europe and the United States.
Once signed, it will cement a key part of the US government's plan to create a new global bloc that will ensure the dominance of its largest companies. And to understand why, we need to go back to the 1950s.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA.
After the Second World War, the United States accounted for half of the world's economy. Its influence was unmatched by any country, and it was able to write the early rules of international trade to its advantage. The World Trade Organization was created in this context, and the U.S. dictated rules that favored American business. But as economies like China and India joined the WTO, it became a more democratized arena, and the U.S. found it harder to control its decision-making.
At the WTO, at its Doha rounds, India spoke up and Brazil spoke up, and the U.S. lost control.
I think it's no use beating around the bush. This meeting has collapsed.
The U.S. felt it needed a new strategy to maintain its global dominance. So in the classical American style, they went big. To bypass the WTO, they're creating the biggest international agreements that the world has ever seen. They're called the Three Big T's. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or TTIP, and the Trade in Services Agreement, or TISA. And they're all being negotiated in secret right now.
We only found out when WikiLeaks was able to leak parts of them.
And what's interesting is when you look across all of these deals, whether it be TTIP, TPP or TISA, China is excluded, but also Brazil, Russia, India, South Africa, they're all excluded because those are the emerging economies.
What is not often understood is that these agreements are part of a geopolitical war. This is a new war which is taking place between the United States and China. The United States is very scared of the rise of China, so it has moved to militarily encircle it through what is called the pivot to Asia, and now it's moving on to doing that economically.
The basic idea which comes across from reading US strategy papers is the construction of a new grand enclosure, and to put inside this grand enclosure the United States, 51 other countries, 1.6 billion people, and two-thirds of global GDP. To integrate Latin America away from Brazil and towards the United States, to integrate Southeast Asia away from China and towards the United States, and to integrate Western Europe, pulling it away from Eurasia as a whole and towards the Atlantic.
Of the three big T's, WikiLeaks has revealed four chapters of the TPP, which affects 12 countries in the Americas and Southeast Asia. We also obtained and released the core text of TISA, which affects 52 countries, including the EU. But nearly all of TTIP is still secret. When signed, TTIP will cover half of global GDP and will affect every European member state. Yet EU parliamentarians have serious restrictions in accessing the proposed agreement.
Yeah, I find it incredible as well that for something which is a trade agreement, not a matter of life and death in terms of security, where maybe you can understand some restrictions, and we don't even like those very much, but for a trade agreement, you know, that we can't actually make notes about what it is we're reading, issues that we might want to take away to look into, which actually might reassure us, you know, if we really were able to sort of take this away and look at it in depth.
We don't have access to the key documents, the most important ones, because the devil is in the detail. When it comes to trade agreements, you need to know exactly what's in the text so that you can assess what the impact's going to be.
If EU parliamentarians want to see the TTIP, they have to call the US embassy and make an appointment. The appointments are only available 2 days a week for 2-hour time slots. Only two parliamentarians are permitted at once. They go to the US embassy, they have to hand in every electronic device, so they cannot possibly make a copy. They must agree to keep everything confidential, and then they're led to a secure reading room where two US embassy guards watch everything that they do. How can EU parliamentarians possibly understand what they're negotiating for Europe under these circumstances.
The world's biggest corporations don't have the same problem. They have been receiving VIP access from day one and have had abundant influence in the negotiations.
People, the likes of you and I, are excluded. Governments, to a great extent, are excluded. Those who are included are the multinational corporations.
These agreements are basically corporate ownership agreements. The funny thing about free trade agreements, as we understand them, is they often have nothing to do with trade in the sense of the mutual lowering of tariffs. What they're about is enshrining an investor rights regime in the respective countries and ensuring that corporations can run wild in the respective economies with very, very little regulation or impingement by government or authorities.
These treaties will have huge, huge implications for literally almost every critical issue that an individual citizen or community would care about: health, education, the environment, privacy, and access to medicines. I mean, the list could go on.
One of the most criticized aspects of TTIP is a system called the Investor State Dispute Settlement, or ISDS. It's a secretive international tribunal that allows companies to sue states over virtually anything that they can claim affects their investment.
If a protest affects their profits, they can sue. If laws affect their profits, they can sue. If new regulations might impact where or what they want to do with their money, they can sue.
This is a new power which will be handed over to US corporations to sue the governments of Europe in a parallel judicial system which is available to them alone. So people have no access to it, domestic firms have no access to it, governments have no access to it. It's just there for foreign investors, in this case, US corporations.
Based on ISDS history, critics argue that European state sovereignty and democracy are at serious risk. Previous lawsuits include Swedish company Vattenfall suing the German state for $3.7 billion for phasing out nuclear energy. British American Tobacco sued Australia for passing a law limiting cigarette advertising. The French company Veolia sued Egypt for raising the minimum wage. TTIP advocates say that in order for the EU and US to become a single market, regulatory barriers need to be eliminated. This way, for example, a US seatbelt manufacturer already selling seatbelts domestically wouldn't need to test for safety a second time, as the EU would agree to recognize the US safety standards. They argue that this would save costs, create jobs, and lower prices for consumers. But just how safe are US standards?
So in the USA, 70% of all processed food sold in supermarkets contains genetically modified ingredients, whereas in the European Union, we've said quite clearly we don't want GM ingredients in our food chain. Similarly, in the US, 90% of all beef is produced using growth hormones, which have been found to be carcinogenic in humans. So they're banned in the European Union. And what the US government is saying is that under TTIP, under the free trade rules that they want to bring in, European consumers don't get the right to choose.
TTIP includes all the most important public sectors in Europe, including education, water, railways, postal services, and most controversially, it also includes public health services.
What is so scary about this is that corporations want to lock in their power. So they not only want increased power, but they want to make it impossible for sovereign governments to reverse the changes which are going to give them power. So, for example, with TTIP, if it passes with ISDS in it, the privatization of the National Health Service, which is happening in the UK, can never be reversed.
What is democratic about an enormous imposition of power on countries whose citizens have no way of knowing what's going on, of debating it, or influencing their government in its decision? That's anti-democratic.
The history of these agreements shows that they're very difficult to change unless people can see what's in them. And that's why they're kept secret. Because when the contents are revealed, it generates an opposition.
WikiLeaks has had considerable success delaying the TPP and opening up the debate around it and the teaser by releasing the secret draft texts. Our publication of an earlier proposed US-EU agreement, the ACTA, killed it entirely. WikiLeaks is raising a €100,000 reward for Europe's most wanted secret, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. Help the world become a more transparent place. Do your part. Go to wikileaks.org/TTIP-reward.
All right, let's just put this in summary, because there was a lot of information from many people, including John Pilger and Julian Assange, among others. This new agreement is completely in secret. Thus far, WikiLeaks hasn't been able to get the actual draft. But what some people have said is the following, who've seen some of it, that they would be able to privatize, without opposition or interference, industries in the United States, including the largest industry in America, which is healthcare. That means you would not have a universal health care. You would have individual providers for individual conditions, and they would charge you a lot for that. They could take our roads, our highways, and privatize them. So wherever you went, you would have to pay to be on that road. They could take over the, let's say, the subways of New York, the buses of Chicago. And you want to go on there, they can charge you whatever they want. If you can't pay it, too bad. They can take over a water system. And once again, you would have to pay. So also, if we had a law now in effect that protected us from some carcinogen, but they were making that product, they could sue us and we would have to pay them billions of dollars in restitution, even though it was shown to be carcinogenic or destructive to the environment. That becomes of no consequence. It impacts the profits of corporation. It's all about protecting profits, but it's also about making America the most hegemonic country in the world, the most powerful. That's what it's about. Now, who would want that? How legitimate could a treaty be if it was kept from all the people it would impact? Even the legislators, as you heard, had to go into a room with no cell phones, and they were monitored by two guards, and only two could go in at a time. How democratic is that? Well, Hillary Clinton supports that. Jill Stein does not. And it remains to be seen whether or not Donald Trump will support it. He says he does not support it. Maybe he doesn't. But Gary Johnson does support this. And that's unfortunate, because Gary Johnson's on the right side of about 22 issues, on the wrong side of 10 that I've looked at. But this is a big one. This is a game changer for our entire country, our economy. And once this happens, no court in America would have any power. That would relegate to an outside tribunal, that there's no way of appealing it, and the people who would be judging the rightness of a case would be the very lawyers who work for those corporations. Now, following that, but something actually connected, I'm going to play you another clip. And this one is about Hillary Clinton. Let's listen to this one about Hillary Clinton. I'll explain why it's so important to judge her based upon her own statement, judge me based upon my needs, or what I've done, what I've done.
When you run for president, you need to be judged by what you have done. And I think the evidence is pretty clear.
Oh, it is clear, Mrs. Clinton. So let's take a trip back and look at what you've done. She's a compulsive liar.
I remember landing under sniper fire. There was supposed to be some kind of a greeting ceremony at the airport, but instead we just ran with our heads down to get into the vehicles.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email.
Secretary Clinton said there was nothing marked classified on her emails either sent or received. Was that true?
That's not true.
Secretary Clinton said, I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email. There is no classified material. Was that true?
No, there was classified material emailed.
Well, have you always told the truth?
I've always tried to. Always. Always.
Jimmy Carter said, I will never lie to you.
You know, you're asking me to say, have I ever? I don't believe I ever have. I don't believe I ever have. I don't believe I ever will.
She suppressed rape victims of Bill Clinton.
She was just holding on to my hand. She didn't, because I had started to turn away from her. And she held on to my hand and she said, do you understand everything that you do? I mean, cold chills went up my spine. That's the first time I became afraid of that woman.
you interpret that to mean she knew about the incident?
I certainly do. I think she's always known. I think she's always covered up for him.
What Mr. Clinton did to me was wrong.
And she knew what her husband did to those women. There's no way that she did not know that. They're just not truthful people. And it's been a history of knowing that they're not truthful people. I don't know for sure what she wants to run for, unless it's just an ego thing.
Defended a child rapist.
Took a lot of different tests. I had his progress, which he passed. Forever destroyed my faith in
politics. How did this turn out?
Oh, he plea bargained. He got him off. Was time served in the county jail. He'd been in the county jail about 2 months.
Flip-flops on major issues.
I have been very consistent over the course of my entire life. I have always fought for the same values and principles. But
I believe that marriage is not just a bond, but a sacred bond between a man and a woman.
Do you think New York State should recognize gay marriage?
No.
No. Okay.
I support marriage for lesbian and gay couples.
We've got to do several things, and I am, you know, adamantly against illegal immigrants. I made this exception basically on humanitarian grounds because of the individual stories, but certainly we've got to do more at our borders, and people have to stop employing illegal immigrants.
Well, look, I voted numerous times when I was a senator to spend money to build a barrier to try to prevent illegal immigrants from coming in.
Instead of building walls, we need to be tearing down barriers.
We're going to put a lot of coal miners and coal companies out of business.
We're going to do a lot more on carbon capture and sequestration, try to see how we can get coal to be a fuel that can be continued to be sold and continue to be mined.
I take a backseat to no one when you look at my record and standing up and fighting for progressive values.
You know, I get accused of being kind of moderate and center. I plead guilty.
I support the Second Amendment. I don't want your guns.
So for the federal government to be having any kind of, you know, blanket rules that they're going to try to impose, I think doesn't make sense. Senator,
and when it comes to guns, we have just too many guns on the streets, in our homes, in our neighborhoods.
We've got to go after this. And here again, the Supreme Court is wrong on the Second Amendment. And I am going to make that case every chance I get. So I will need your help on that.
Several communities have done gun buyback programs. But I think it would be worth considering doing it on the national level. But certainly the Australian example is worth looking at.
Will you say anything to get elected?
Okay, there you have it. Here's a woman who will flip-flop and say one thing at one time. She says she's for the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the TTIP, the one we just played a clip on. In fact, under her State Department, she put pressure on countries in the European Union that did not want to have genetically engineered food, and she said there would be severe repercussions. This is all on her cables. 44 separate cables showing that she was promoting the acceptance of the TTIP and the TTP. Then she says when she sees the public's against it, I would have to make sure that this was right for all Americans. She said the same thing, her and her husband, about GATT, NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, and you see the outcome of that. So why is it then that the American public and a lot of women and a lot of minorities continue to believe that she should be president when all we have to look is the balkanization that her husband did, killing of 500,000 children through our program of destroying their water system, electric systems, and all the death in Rwanda they could have stopped. Look at Syria. Look at Libya. It tells me more about someone who's willing to vote for her uncritically than about her. We've been able to know about her for a long time. I'd like your input on this. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888 on TalkBack about she is the head of a group of people. She's not the power. She's their vehicle. And that's why they give her, her and her husband all those dollars to the foundation, and that's why it's a pay-to-play. You want to get close to her, you want to get in her circle, and also understand, who are the people supporting her in the media, the New York Times and CNN? Why would they support her? Why would anyone support her, Obama, Clinton, or Trump? Why? Well, because they get something in return. We just don't know what it is, but they always get something. Let me show you one example. Let's go to this clip, our engineer in New York, let's go to this clip where the Democratic National Committee was hacked, and it showed specifically that some of the people were going to be getting preferential treatment and having a lunch with her, which was $200,000. So she could have five people at lunch. That's $1 million for one lunch. Then we'll play the George Carlin clip.
There's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education. It's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the... They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they get by a system that threw them overboard 30 years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. Workers, people who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club.
Mike from Florida, your turn.
Hi, Gary, and good afternoon. I like to say that these trade agreements are the end of America and the end of a free world as we know it. It all started with NAFTA, and they really took advantage of the third world countries. As we know, I have family members that live in the Dominican Republic, and they work in these free trade zones that you talked about on Friday, and they don't get no money. They work maybe all week, a whole month for $100, and majority of labor actually is Haitian immigrants that come over, and that's what they're going to turn us into. And I really think, Gary, I respect you very much, and I know you're not for Donald Trump or possibly against, but he has been against the NAFTA from the 80s, in the early 80s, and late 90s. And he's the only one. I mean, Jill Stein, she has great options. But she can't get on in many states, Gary. The only way to stop Clinton would be with Trump. And I think it's time for you to sit down with the Patriot movement of Alex Jones, Roger Stone, Paul Craig Roberts, Gerald Celente, and be an advisor to Trump and help him out. Because you, with him, are our only chances for stopping this.
Okay, let's just look at what you said for the remaining minute here. Some of the people you mentioned I would not sit down with because they're not interested in working cooperatively or collectively. They have their own agenda. Trump is going to surround himself, already is, with people who are going to make the choices for him. These are the best and brightest out of the think tanks. There'll be some from conservative think tanks, some of the Council on Foreign Relations, Free Enterprise Institute, the Cato Institute, a whole lot of them to select from. These are the very same, very bright, well-credentialed, very charismatic, individuals who go before the television say we need to invade Iraq. We need to invade Afghanistan. We need to invade Syria. We need to invade Yugoslavia. We need to invade Vietnam. These are super hawks. These are super neoconservatives. Those are the people who are now fully encased around Trump. Now, if Trump had known better, he would have brought in a Jill Stein as a vice president, but he didn't. On his own, there is no competition. Trump will destroy himself. You'll see it's like two scorpions in a cocktail glass, both with the face of Trump on it. And that gives an absolute straight shot to the White House, except there may be an October surprise from Julian Assange, so detrimental that they can bypass Comey and his sold-out FBI and go directly to Congress to impeach Clinton, in which case then Bernie Sanders would automatically, based upon the rules of the second-most delegates, be able to get it. But there's one last thing about Bernie Sanders. After he found that he had been denied, legally denied, the opportunity to have a fair competition in the Democratic election process in the primaries, he should have had his attorneys go in and sue the National Democratic Party and their organization, individuals involved, for conspiracy. And then he should have said to his followers, this whole primary is null and void because they didn't count votes, they hid votes, they destroyed votes, and all this other, and the media is biased, and throw it all into turmoil, forcing the American public and the media to recognize you don't go forward once and have a, you know, give a crown to this pathologist. You don't. You stop everything and redo it because it was not earned fairly. So what's the New York Times and these other suck-ups do? They go after the people who leak the message, not the contents and the veracity of the message itself. That shows you where Bernie is. He's also one of them. Don't confuse the person who is supporting the system and turned over all of his devotees, all of his followers, to her. He didn't say, well, I'm sorry you got to vote for her, but there is also Jill Stein, and she supports a lot of what I do, and even more that I don't, on the right side. He didn't say that. He sold them out. Right now, there is no positive option. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. I'm Gary Knoll. Have a nice day. Thank you for listening.
First I get cold and hot, think I'm on fire, but I'm not. Oh, what a pain I've got. It must be love. There's nothing I can do. All that I want is you. Look what I'm going through. It must be love. It must be love. It must be love. I fall like a sparrow and fly like a dove. You must be the dream I've been dreaming of. Oh, what a feeling. It must be love. Something is wrong, all right, I think of you all night. Can't sleep till morning light, it must be love. Seeing you in my dreams, holding you close to me. Oh, what else can it be? It must be love. It must be love, it must be love. I fall like a sparrow and fly like a dove. You must be the dream I've been dreaming of. Oh, what a feeling, it must be love. It must be love, it must be love. I fall like a sparrow and fly like a dove. You must be the dream I've been dreaming of. Oh, what a feeling, it must be love. It must be love, it must be love. I fall like a sparrow and fly like a dove. You must be the dream I've been dreaming of. be loved. I fall like a sparrow and fly like a dove. You must be the dream I've been dreaming of. Oh, what a feeling. It must be love. It must be love. It must be love. I fall.